You're listening to Foo Campus Radio. Welcome to the Mechanisms Podcast. I'm your host, Viniv, and today I'm doing a solo episode. And I'm at the Fear University, and there's nobody around. And there will be nobody around until at least the 1st of June, because the university has closed until then, and possibly we'll extend that for a little bit further. So, yeah, what I want to talk about today is not about exactly what has been going on with the pandemic, but rather how we can work at home more effectively. Because I think at the end of the day, we can worry about like a bunch of stuff, but I think focusing on what we can change is a better thing to do right now. So I hope I can contribute something to your lives by doing this episode. And you may ask yourself, why are you qualified to do such a thing? And the answer is, I'm not. But, you know, so I wrote a book 2 years ago called The Student's Definitive Guide. And the book is terrible, but I did a course for high school students and also for university students. And the general idea was how to build routines, how to study more effectively, methods and techniques that you can use. So I think a lot of stuff that I have talked about in the past are quite relevant to the current situation. And I also have a few extra things to say. So if you're one of the three people that have read the book, then don't worry. I think there's still something new here. What has prompted me to record this episode is that I am working on my literature thesis. So I'm a neuroscience student at Fu University, and I am currently reading a lot and writing a lot, and I need to do that at home. So at the end, I'm going to talk about writing specifically, but throughout the whole episode, I'm just going to talk about productivity in general. So the episode structure, you can find it on the website with show notes and links to everything that I'm going to say. And if you're watching this on YouTube, also, I'm going to put the timestamps on the description. So why working at home is so difficult? I have talked to a bunch of people during the quarantine, and a lot of people seem to struggle a lot with working from home. And even myself, throughout my whole life, I never liked working at home. I always felt that I was more productive when I was outside my home environment. And I think the reason why most of us struggle with working from home is that not only you have distractions like kids and wives and neighbors and dogs and whatever, but also there is a very nice thing that happens when you separate work from home, that you know that you go to a place, to your office or your work, then you know this is the space where I do this, what I'm going to write, I'm going to send email or whatever you do. And then after 8 hours, I'm going back home. And then home is the space where I relax and do whatever. However, if you're doing both in the same environment, then you have conflicting cues, essentially. So it's quite difficult for us to separate like environmental context of working and relaxing when we're doing both at the same time, especially when you're doing it in the same room. So for instance, what I used to do back in my home country is that I had a big kitchen table where I can just put my computer and then work there. And I thought it was fine. It created enough separation. However, today I live in Amsterdam, so my room is tiny and I don't have space for nothing. So I need to sleep and eat and work and do everything in my room, which is less than 10 square meters. So I think a lot of you listening experience the same thing, where you have to do many different things in the same environment. And I think we take for granted the fact that our brains use our environment to create context clues to know what we're supposed to do. So you're going to feel much more distracted working in your room because your brain is constantly running loops of, oh, I can sleep, or I can read a book, or I can play piano, or I can do something more fun in my room because that's what I usually do in my room. I don't work in my room. So I think a good tip, if you have the space for it, is that you should work outside your bedroom for sure, if that's possible. If that's not possible, I'm going to talk about how to create some separation in a bit. So I think a lot of people have taken for granted the fact that your work environment creates a system in which you work. So after you arrive in your office or your workplace, you attend to the things that demand attention. So you respond to email, or you have meetings, or you attend to the people that need your help with something. And that environment creates a structure for you to operate. So you know what you're supposed to do based on whatever is coming at you, be it email or people, you know, screaming for help. But if you're working from home, then you need to create your own system. You need to create an environment, not only an environment, but also a system in which you work, where it's clear what you're supposed to do next. So I think a big part of being productive is understanding the idiosyncrasies of your brain and playing a game of tricking yourself. Because by putting systems and routines around you, it doesn't matter if you're lazy, then the system that you have created push you. And I think that helps you a lot, because you can do a lot on sheer willpower. But I think creating systems is the better option always. So in talking about systems, I'm going to talk about routines first, and then setting up your space later. So in terms of routines, there's a quote from a book called Atomic Habits by James Clear that says, "You do not rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems." And I think, you know, a lot of us have many goals. We maybe during this quarantine period, we're saying, you know, I'm going to do all these online courses and I'm going to learn a new language, or I'm going to write a book, or whatever you're trying to do. But creating systems is the thing that's durable over the long run. So routines, I'm going to talk about morning routines first. So I think it's very important to do the same things in the same order, at least for starting your day, because it's quite easy to, you know, because you don't have anywhere to go right now, you can just sleep in and be lazy and roll in bed with your phone for 4 hours because, you know, you don't have anywhere to go. However, by having a structured routine to start your day, After a few weeks of doing the same thing over and over again, it just becomes automatic. You don't have to think about it. So you wake up and you have the same set of things that you do. Maybe you meditate, maybe you take a shower, maybe you, you know, it actually doesn't quite matter what the sequence of things that you do, but doing the same things every day helps a lot by, you know, creating a habit, creating something that's automatic for you. And I'd like to reinforce a habit that you should probably look into during this period, which is meditation. And I think a lot of people roll their eyes when listening even to the word meditation, but there's quite a very interesting scientific literature that's coming out in the last like 5 or 10 years about meditation and how much it helps us with, you know, anxiety and pretty much every affective disorder that I can think about. So I'm not saying you're going to do it and then become less depressed in like a day, but I think meditation for me at least has developed the skill of witnessing. So witnessing meaning the ability to perceive your feelings as feelings. So when you're becoming anxious, you're able to stop yourself and think, oh, I'm anxious. That's interesting. Why am I anxious? So instead of just feeling the feeling and then rolling around and become overwhelmed and so forth, by just having this skill of stopping and paying attention to your feelings, I think that becomes a very robust mindset where it doesn't matter what you're feeling. You may feel bad, you may feel anxious, you may feel depressing, you may feel grief, but if you just see the feelings for what they are, instead of blindly feeling them and then, you know, ruminating on them, the feelings just become less intense. That's my experience so far. So I think anyone that commits themselves to a few weeks of daily meditation can develop that skill specifically, which I think will be really, really important for your well-being during this period. And Sam Harris has a meditation app called Waking Up. And Sam Harris is a neuroscientist whom I admire a lot. And he has a very, very interesting guided meditations. And the app is paid, but if you don't have any money, if you're not capable of paying for the app, he can give you a free ear. And there's no tricks. He doesn't require a credit card. He just gives you a free ear. And at the end of the year, if you still don't have the money, you can just send another email, then he gives you another free ear. And I think that's a great business model, especially for these times of like economic crisis for some people. So if you don't know where to start, I think Sam Harris app is the best one that I have tried. And I have tried like all of them. Headspace, Calm, 10% Happier. But I just like Sam Harris better. I'm not sure why. Maybe because he's a neuroscientist. I don't know. Yes. So routines, doing the same thing to create a habit. Meditate if you can to start your day more calmly and less, you know, carry it away by your feelings. And another thing that I have started doing again this year, even before all of this craziness started, is journaling. And, you know, I have had bullet journals and like complicated systems, but today I literally just write down what I'm going to do today. Like, what are my waking hours devoted to? What I hope to achieve at the end of the day, and How am I going to achieve it? The system that I use is called Time Boxing, which was developed by Carl Newport. And it's actually very simple. You just write like the hours that you're awake. So from 7 to, I don't know, 10 p.m. And then you write what your plan is, how you're going to spend that hour. And you create a box. And you're following through the day by just, you know, looking at your plan and seeing if you're achieving that. And if anything changes, if you cannot achieve the thing that you set out to do, you cross it out and then you write the thing that you actually did. And that's sort of like a very good commitment device where, you know, at the start of the day, hopefully you're very optimistic about what you can accomplish. You say, oh yes, I am going to do everything on my to-do list. And then like half an hour later, you're checking Twitter or, you know, Reddit or whatever is more fun than doing whatever you're supposed to do. So I think, so instead of having like broad expectations, so I'm going to do everything, just saying, okay, let's create a real plan. What can I do between, I don't know, 8 and 11 in those 3 hours? What's the best thing that I should do with my time? And just sitting down and thinking a few minutes about how you should spend your day, I think improves the quality of your work like 1,000% for sure. And I think a good idea to think about how to structure your day is to think about what are the times of the day in which you're more effective. So maybe you're a morning person. So after you wake up, you do your morning routine, then you're done after like half an hour. the best hours of your intellectual capacity are between 7 and, I don't know, 11. And those hours should be spent doing the most difficult thing that you can do. So, for instance, if you're a writer, spending time writing during that period would be great for you. And then after those hours, you're probably more tired, and then you should do the next most important thing. Maybe you're reading and researching. Once you're done doing that, then you're really tired, and maybe you should spend your time checking email or, you know, doing something that requires very, very little cognitive capacity. So I think writing down your plan and thinking about what are the prime hours, the prime working hours that I can have is very, very important. So I think that's a very nice idea. And I'm going to link to Cole Newport's blog post about it. So maybe he also inspires you a little bit more. And as important as a morning routine, so waking up at the same time every day requires you to have an evening routine. So going to bed at the same time every day, because again, you're at home all day. It's very easy to stay at your computer or stay in your phone in bed for like 5 hours, then going to bed at like 3 a.m. And then, you know, you cannot do your morning routine because you didn't sleep so well. So I think creating also like a simple system to going to bed every day at the same time is also very important. And that's very, very, very easy to say and very, very difficult to accomplish. So, you know, there's the common tricks that people say, you know, don't have your phone next to your bed, have it charging in another room if you can. And what I actually have been using that's great is an app that literally blocks my computer at certain times. So every day at 10 p.m., my computer is locked down. Like literally, I cannot do anything with it. It's just blocked, and then I cannot access it. I do that with a program called Cold Turkey, and I think it's amazing because it's very difficult to be uninstalled. And that mode where it says, oh, you're out of your, you cannot access your computer, you know, it can be dangerous to do that. But for me, I have always said the same thing to myself. Like I trick myself by saying, oh, you know, I can just answer one more email, or I can just watch one more video, or, you know, just play one more match of chess or whatever I want to do. And then when I look at the clock, it's like 3 a.m. So I said, okay, I'm not great at self-control in that respect. So let me just block my computer. And that's great. And blocking my computer is good. Blocking my phone is also good. So I also have an app that blocks my phone at certain times. And it's called Off Time. And you will not believe how much easier it is to go to bed once you don't have your computer and your phone. You just said, oh man, I'm so bored, I'm going to sleep. So, I don't know. Some people may say, you know, this is crazy and you're crazy and, you know, everything's crazy, but, that works for me. And maybe if you're struggling with that aspect of sleeping, maybe that can help you too. Another thing that helps me a lot is just taking a hot shower, because taking a hot shower before you go to bed, like immediately before you go to bed, helps you to drop your core body temperature. So in order to sleep better, you have to have like a cold environment. And taking a hot shower, maybe that's counterintuitive, but what that does is that it vasodilates your body. So your blood vessels become expanded. So you're dissipating heat more easily. And what that does, so immediately after you walk out of the shower, your body is dissipating heat so much and your body temperature drops like very fast. So that helps you to get to the optimal core body temperature very quickly. So taking a hot shower before going to bed is very, very useful. Another good thing to think about is to have clear environmental cues. So for instance, I have a thing that plays white noise next to my bed. And that not only helps me to block out, you know, noise from the outside. So it doesn't matter if my roommates or my neighbors are making noise, I can just ignore them because I have like this constant, you know, thing in the background that's like humming away and blocking everything else. But it also serves as an association. So whenever I start playing the white noise, then I want to sleep because I only listen to it during bedtime. So I think just that simple association, having a sound that you hear every time that you're going to sleep, is a very good way to, you know, start the sleeping habit in a sense. And another thing that I have started using is a diffuser. So things, a thing that, you know, when I bought it, it said aromatherapy, which I don't believe, but just having a smell of lavender or whatever I have, again, is very useful to create an association. So that smell means I am going to bed, I'm going to sleep. And by having these associations in your environment, I think that doing the action becomes like much more easier. So those are things that you can think about. Next, I want to talk about setting up your space. So another thing that I took away from the book, Atomic Habits, is that if you improve 1% every day, you're 38 times better at the end of the year. But if you get 1% worse every day, then you quickly deteriorate to zero. So, you know, I think I'm going to talk about like three things, but you may say, oh, those are very small things. Like, why do I even need to care about them? But especially for things that you're doing every single day, like sitting at a desk and looking at your computer for 8 hours, I think any sort of improvement makes a lot of sense. One thing that has been of worry to many people, including myself, is RSI. So now that you not only work at your computer, but you're also socializing at your computer and doing everything at your computer, you may run into troubles where you're having pains in your wrist, and especially the tendons and nerves in your wrist. So, and that happens because you're basically using the same tendons and the same muscle group every single waking moment of your day, basically. So after a few days or weeks or sometimes years of continuously using those tendons and muscle groups, you can run into RSI problems. So even if you don't have RSI problems, I think it's very worth considering the following, which is vary the method of input of your computer. So don't use the same movements to interact with your computer for 8 hours in a day. That's a really, really bad idea, because there is no way that after a few years, you're not going to suffer from RSI. There's just no way. So by varying the method of input, you have a few options. So you have like trackpads. So your laptop most likely have a trackpad, and you have like magic trackpads from Apple where you're using digit movement basically and very small wrist movement. You have classical mice, computer mice, where you're using your wrist movements. Your hand stays mostly still and then you're moving your wrist. You have some ergonomic mice where you move your thumb to move the cursor, which again uses a different movement. But my favorite is a drawing tablet. So I actually heard this a long time ago in a podcast called Cortex, where the guy that was suggesting like you to use a drawing tablet, he is not an illustrator. He's just saying, oh, I just work on my laptop with a pen and it's fine. The pen is very good to interact with windows and drawing, dragging things around and so forth. And the pen is very, very ergonomical because you're mostly using your arm, which is less prone to damage compared to your wrists when you're using the mouse. So I think if you have the capacity to buy a drawing tablet, and you have RSI problems, or you're worrying about RSI problems, I think it's a very, very nice investment. In terms of ergonomics, you should check that your chair is at the appropriate height. So when you put your hands on your desk, you should be able to place it where your wrist's not bent. So if your wrist is going up, that means that your chair is too low. And if it's going down, that means your chair is too high. So once you adjust the height of your chair, you should be able to put your wrist on top of the desk and it being straight. And usually when you do that, your chair will be too high in relation to the floor. So what most people do is that they have a footrest. So just a thing on the floor where you can put your feet up, and then you can bring your chair forward and type with your back supporter. So that's very, very good. That's very, you don't even have to buy like a footrest. You can just have like a box or anything that you have laying around. Just anything that you can rest your feet upon to have some more, you know, stability. But if you can afford it, then the footrest is a very nice investment as well. Another tip is that the top of the laptop or the monitor that you're looking at needs to be at the same level as your eyes. So if you're working on your laptop, I think buying a laptop stand and typing with an external keyboard is very much more appropriate than hunching over your laptop and typing looking down. Because when you're looking down, you're putting some strain on your neck muscles, which is not so good. So you should be looking forward, because then your neck's more relaxed, and that's better overall. Right. So that was setting up the space. So next I'm going to talk about general productivity. And for this, I always like the visual imagery of a TED Talk by Tim Urban, which is, we all have a procrastination monkey inside our brains. So we have our planes and stuff, but the procrastination monkey just, you know, wants to do anything else. So we need to be working with that monkey in order to achieve our goals. So a simple thing that you can do, and it's the same that I do with, you know, going to bed in time by blocking the computer, is blocking the computer throughout the day from distractions. So the same app that I use for both, that I mentioned before, Code Turkey for Windows and Offtime on Android. And if you're a Mac and iPhone user, I think Freedom is the best app. Basically what I have is a list of websites that I don't want to have access to throughout my working day. So I don't want to have access to Facebook. I don't want to have access to BBC because I check the news too much. I don't want to have access to Reddit or Twitter or Facebook. What I want to do is have the internet, because the internet is very useful for research. But what I don't want to do is be one click away from being able to be distracted. So I just have that list, and I just allow myself to access those websites between 6 and 7 p.m. during weekdays. And then during weekends, then I can go crazy and do whatever I want. But I think just, you know, having something that's very difficult to get rid of, it's very difficult to uninstall Code Turkey and Offtime. It just helps you a lot to focus. It just reduces the possibility of being distracted, which is very, very nice. Another very general thing is that you should always break down your tasks into things that can be done within the times that you allotted for. So once you have, let's say you're listening to this whole show, and then you do the time blocking, and you say, okay, I want to write between 8 and 11. Okay, that's good. But what you're going to do? It's like, how do you know if you have succeeded or failed at the task that you set out to do? Just having write as a task between 8 and 11, maybe that's enough, but sometimes it's not only nice to have like a time outcome, but also a proper fail state of like, did I do this or yes or no? So is there anything tangible that I can work towards in these 3 hours? So for instance, instead of saying writing, I could say, write the two first paragraphs of, I don't know, the introduction or something like that. Or have a goal of number of words, like write 1,000 words or something. So that little trick of, you know, thinking about what's the fail state of my task, I think is very, very useful. And if you can have something that's measurable, not only time, but also can I look back and say, did I succeed? Yes or no? I think it's very, very good. So always try to think about like specific goals, and they're much more useful than general tasks. Another thing that I want to talk about is timers. So obviously you're not actually writing for 3 hours. So at least I'm not. I know very few people that can do that because our attention is a very, very limited resource. We can work throughout the whole day, but usually what that entails is that we're working in chunks. So we work an hour, then we take a break, then we work 40 minutes, then we take a break, then we, you know, have lunch, then we work again for like 50 minutes. Because, you know, our attention span is very short, and I think having breaks in between working periods is like the simplest thing that you can do to improve your productivity. Because if you're actually sitting down writing for 3 hours, at the end of the second hour, you're much less productive than you were when you started in the first hour. So I think in general, I say to people, you know, listen to your body. You should know when it's time to take a break, when you're being unable to think about what you're supposed to think about or to focus on your reading or to do whatever you're supposed to do. You can do Pomodoros where you have like set periods of time, like 25 minutes and 5 minutes of rest. What I would recommend to people, especially during this period of quarantine, is that you use a time tracker. So a time tracker is a thing that you can have where you just say, I'm going to write now, and then you click a button and then you see a timer going off. And again, as with the journaling, this is a very, like for me, is a very good commitment device. So when I say I want to write and then I push a button, then, you know, I cannot do anything else. Like I would feel bad if I did anything else. So it's a very interesting way of, you know, saying to yourself, 3, 2, 1, yes, go. And then you start working. And also at the end of the day, you have a realistic perspective of what you actually did. Because, you know, a lot of us say, oh, I have been working all day. But if you actually did time tracking, you would say, oh, I worked for like 2 hours. And I did like, I procrastinated for like 6 hours, which is normal. But I think time tracking is a very good idea, especially in periods where, you know, we're isolated and working by ourselves. And I would recommend the app Toggle, because Toggle allows you to work with Pomodoros. So you can do both. So you can time track. And then at the end of this session that you have, so you can choose 25 minutes and 5 minutes. I choose 42 minutes and 7 minutes. So 42 minutes working, 7 minutes break. That just works better for me generally. And yeah, I love it. So I highly recommend it. And finally, I'm just going to say, respect your inner sloth. So, or respect the procrastination monkey. So you did your morning routine and then you meditated, then you're nice and zen, then you set out, you're sitting in front of your computer, with your computer that's blocked to all distractions, and then you have a nice cup of tea, and then you breathe and you say, man, I just don't want to write today. So what I'm going to do, like not write? That's not a good idea. So there are two things that I try to keep in mind when I'm feeling lazy overall, which are, trying to reduce the amount that I need to do and also varying what I do. So let me give you an example. Okay, my goal is to write 500 words, let's say. I don't want to do that. That's very difficult. Okay. Can you write 250 words? No, that's too difficult. Okay, can you write one paragraph? I don't know. I don't want to do that. Okay, can you write one sentence? Yeah, okay. Yeah, everybody can write one sentence. So then I write one sentence. Then I look at the sentence and say, okay, can I write anything else about this? Yes. Then just once you start, it's so much more easy to create momentum. So you write one sentence and then you say, oh, I see one idea that I could develop more. And then the next sentence becomes more clear, and the next sentence becomes more clear. So it's the same thing with like pretty much any habit that you want to form. So if you want to exercise and you wake up and say, oh man, I don't want to exercise today. Then you say, okay, can you put your exercise clothes on? And you say, okay, whatever. Then you put it on and say, can you put your shoes on? And say, okay. And now you have your gear on. Then you say, can you exercise now? And you think to yourself, yeah, sure, whatever. Because there's a very interesting thing where if you commit yourself just a little bit, you create a little bit of momentum, all the hard part afterwards becomes much more easier. So the most difficult thing is to start usually. So playing this game of like reducing your objective is very, very useful to trick yourself into actually, you know, working much more than you would have if you didn't do that. So, and especially for the students that are listening to this, I think this the tip of varying the methods in which you study is the best tip that I can give anyone. Because, man, I don't know, I find studying, like sitting down and reading for 8 hours is like almost impossible for me. I cannot do it. But what I can do, I can study 8 hours, but I cannot read for 8 hours. Let's say you start studying, then you're reading for like an hour and you say, man, I don't want to do this anymore. Okay, that's fine. Let's do something else. Let's create a summary of the lecture that we saw yesterday or whatever. Then you're creating the summary. Then you're done and say, man, this is boring. Oh, let's create a mind map of the chapter we read like last week. So you can always choose to push through like an entire day of working and studying, but varying what you do in this way of not doing the same thing like all day long is also very nice. So if you're feeling the resistance to study and you have been reading for 3 hours, then yeah, you should be feeling resistance to study because your brain was not made to read for 3 hours. So I think those two tips, just, you know, reducing the first objective and then vary the way that you acquire information, I think are very, very important. So next up, I'm going to talk about writing. So I have been working on my thesis and I'm basically spending my days with writing in the morning and reading in the afternoon. And my general philosophy for this, I heard the first time from an interview by Neil Gaiman in the Tim Ferriss show, where he says, when I am writing, I can do writing or I can do nothing, but I'm not allowed to do anything else, which is very interesting to me because it was the first time that I saw this thought articulated, where writing for me is one of the most difficult things I can think of doing. It requires a lot of focus, a lot of concentration, and I can force myself to write, to put words on paper, but that's not the best creative output that I can do. So when you're writing and thinking about connections and thinking about ideas, you should be able to pause and just look at the window and not write. Because at the back of your brain, those ideas are still like, you know, forming and you're coming up with new stuff, even if you don't know it. However, the second that you deviate from that and you do anything else, where you do answer email or go to a website, then your attention is focused on something else. Then that part of your brain that, you know, diffusely connects ideas is not working anymore. So for writing specifically, I think that philosophy is very useful for me because I have this, like, the 3-hour period in which I'm writing, but I'm not actually typing for 3 hours. I'm like typing a few sentences, then stopping and thinking about things and reading things and making connections, then typing some more. And I think that's the best philosophy, not only for fiction, but also for nonfiction. So if you're writing something like a thesis, it's very useful to have the papers and the research material in one side, and then your writing screen on the other side. So having two monitors, I think, is like almost mandatory, because otherwise you're like alt-tabbing all day long. And sometimes it's very useful to have, to be able to look at what you wrote and what somebody else has wrote at the same time, which is not possible when you have like, when you don't have two screens. I guess you can, you know, minimize the two screens and put them on the same monitor, but I think two monitors is like almost mandatory. And I actually bought a second monitor after I have started working in quarantine. And you can buy them very cheaply, especially for writing, because, you know, if you're gaming, then you want a monitor with like 120 hertz, 4K, whatever. But if you're writing, you can just have like something like from 10 years ago with VGA, and you can just buy an adapter. And those monitors you can buy like for 20, 30, 40 euros on Marketplace or eBay or anywhere. So I'm going to talk about the two apps that I'm using mostly for writing the thesis. The first one is called WriteMapper, which is basically mind mapping combined with writing. So basically, if you imagine like a mind map with a central theme on the center and then the bubbles around it, that can be converted into writing, where you have the title in the center and then the headings on the side. And this software, I find it very useful to write like short pieces. So I would not write my whole thesis with MindMapper, but what I would do is write each section with WriteMapper. So I can say something like introduction. So I can have the title in the center and then the headings on the side. And my headings are usually questions. And I can put some references. I'll have some visuals on the video and on the website. But the idea is that writing this way, you can have the title and then just think about ideas. So think about questions like what you want to know about this topic. And then you can write questions like, what is this? What is historical perspective of this? What is known about this in the current literature? Or what is lacking from the current literature? And once you have those questions, then you can just click on each of the mind map like nodes and then start writing and answer those questions. So you can work in this question answer sort of way, which I find to be very useful, very intuitive for me. And the other software that I'm using is called Notion. And Notion is probably a lot more powerful than what I'm using it for. But so in Notion, what I have is a database with papers. So in the database, every paper has a page which has tags with like what the paper uses as methods. So optogenetics, chemogenetics, whatever, electrophysiology, pharmacology. And I have the main conclusion written out. So I can just scroll through all the papers and I see the paper title, then the tags, and then the main conclusions. And for each of those pages, I can click on the page and then I have a page of the things that I found important. So quotes and figures and my own writing about what I think the author is doing right or wrong. So my plan is, once I'm further down my reading path, is that I can filter the database by tags. So let's say I filter by electrophysiology and I'm only seeing all the papers that have electrophysiology in the tag. And I'm seeing all the main takeaways, and I'm seeing on the same screen all the main takeaways from those papers. And I can just click on those papers and see the more detailed information that I have. And so the reason I think that that's so powerful is that that allows me to make broad connections first. So I can say, oh, this group has found this result and this group has found this result, and those are contradictory. So I can try to articulate like why that happens. And I can also check for each one of those papers what I found the most important in their papers. And I can say, oh, there's a difference in the methodology, or I found this connection between them. And I think this is only possible when you have a system like this, where you can have some sort of structure where you can have very broad main takeaways in one side and very specific figures and quotes on the other side. So I'm not sure if I'm going to stick with Notion, but I really like it this far, so I'll see what happens. I'm making a recommendation here. And it's also free for students. So if you have an institutional email, you can just get it for free, which is amazing. As for closing remarks, I want to say that I understand that a lot of people are struggling right now. It's a very difficult time. And you're either doing okay or you're not doing okay. If you're doing okay, try to be the strong arm in your community or your local community, meaning try to make good deeds like buying groceries for people that cannot leave the house, or try to always be available for friends that are stressed right now. And because at some point that might be you, you might struggle in the future as well. And if you're not doing okay, you know, first try to seek for help. The Free University has a bunch of resources for people that are struggling mentally, and you can always schedule like a talk, probably with your course coordinator or with the student psychologist. They are also available. And my philosophy at this point is that I am trying to focus on the thing that I can make the most difference in. So I'm not a rich person. I cannot donate money to hospitals. I cannot volunteer my time because everything's closed. But what I can do is to do my work properly. I can try to do the best writing that I can, and I can, you know, make something that will possibly make a difference for the scientific literature in the future. That's what I can do. And also be available for my family and friends. So I appreciate the time that you took listening to this mess. I hope you have taken anything away from it. And you can check out the show notes at vineuro.com/podcast. That's V-I-N-E-U-R-O. And that's also my Instagram handle. So yeah, stay safe, wash your hands, and I'll see you later. Bye-bye.